Tuning in, I'm Heidi Holton. Coming up next, we've got Native Lights Podcast, where Native voices shine. That's followed by brand new from KEXE, the Season Watch Pod, connecting you with the delights of nature. This is 91.7 KEXE, Grand Rapids, and 90.5 KBXE, Bagley, Bemidji. We are Northern Community Radio, people-powered radio in northern Minnesota, with translator K210DR in Brainerd, 89.9. You can listen at KEXE.org or on your smart speaker. Thanks for keeping us going. Help us out with your donation. Text the word donate to 218-326-1234. And thank you.
You know, when somebody does something that we consider to be extraordinary, we think they had some epiphany or some spiritual something. And for me, it was, I wanted to walk the Mississippi River because it's a river I love. It's the main artery on Nemama Key, and I crisscrossed it every day for 40 years.
Bonjour, hello, welcome to Native Lights, where Indigenous voices shine. I'm your host, Leah Lem. Miigwech for joining me today. Native Lights is more than a podcast and radio show. At its core, it's a place for Native folks to tell their stories. Each and every week, we have great conversations with wonderful guests from a bunch of different backgrounds, musicians, artists, doctors, water walkers, educators, language warriors, you name it. We have a great mix of passions featured on this program. So we talk with our guests about their gifts and how they share those gifts with their community. And it all centers around the big point of purpose in our lives. And it's another opportunity to amplify Native voices. And as you can hear, I am a solo host today. And if you've been following along, you know that Cole Primo, my brother and co-host, was expecting a little one. And, well, he's now out on parental leave. I have permission to say that, so I'm really excited, Auntie. I'm really excited for today's guest, Sharon Day. Sharon does Nibi walks or water walks. She's also the executive director of the Indigenous Peoples Task Force in Minneapolis. And today we'll focus on water walks and how the public can be more aware of the environment by practicing gratitude and spending more time outdoors. And just to say, you know, water is such a significant aspect of our lives. And it's one of those things we don't quite realize until we're without it. So our house in Grand Rapids, we have a well. And when the power goes out, well, that means no water pump. And that can be pretty inconvenient. In fact, I actually made a hotel reservation once during one of these longer power outages just so we could have running water and a restroom and all that good stuff. But, you know, Minnesota has so much water available to us, so many lakes and rivers and streams. And, well, I live right by the Prairie River here in Grand Rapids, and I get to wake up every morning and look out the bedroom window and see the water, the current of the water, and maybe even some wildlife if I'm lucky. Right now we got plenty of geese. I love it when the trumpeter swans come by. Sometimes it's a little territorial there with the geese and the swans, which is kind of fun to watch. But yeah, it's just lovely to be able to, you know, look out and look at water and just kind of feel a part of a larger ecosystem. And I believe my guest today, Sharon Day, kind of highlights that herself. So here's Sharon. Bonjour, Sharon.
Bonjour.
Nice to see you again. It's been a little while since we last chatted. Well, I will get started. Sharon, can you please introduce yourself?
Bonjour, Nanindawe, Maganidug, Nagamo, Mayengen, Indishnakaz, Wabashashian, Dodam, Ojibwe, Kwayendow. Wabashashian Dodam. My name is, in Ojibwe, is Singing Wolf, and I'm from the Martin clan, and I'm an Ojibwe woman, two-spirit. Let's see, and my English name is Sharon Day.
Thank you. And how are you and the family doing?
We're doing fine.
Great. And before we get started on all the things that you do, because the list is long. Is there anything that you are concentrating on or thinking about these days that's kind of sticking in your mind?
Well, you know, thinking a lot about climate change, the effects of climate change. I live on a farm. I've been here for about 6 years. And, you know, when you're close to the plants and in water or lack of it or too much of it, you really notice everything. For instance, this year, you know, we have pretty good water, you know, rain frequently. And so our plants are doing fairly well this year. This spring, we tapped the maple trees. We did not the year before because we had a 2-year drought. So we wanted to give the maples a little bit of a rest. But yeah, you pay more attention. And, you know, as I read about what's happening around the world, you know, we've been experiencing such bad air quality, smoke pollutants in the air from Canada, from the fires up there. And I have friends up in Saskatchewan who talk about, you know, the Canadian fire policy of letting it burn and how it's just really destroying their forest. So, you know, and then we got flooding in Texas and in New York City. So, you know, we have fires raging around the world and temperatures, extreme temperatures. And so I think a lot about climate change and, you know, what are we going to do about it? You know, how do we ensure that our grandchildren have a world that's fit for habitation?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those Canadian wildfires really reminds me how connected we are just through the air and close we end up being. Because I know up here, I live in northern Minnesota, you know, it gets pretty gray and pretty strong smell in the air. And I'm pretty sure it does in a lot of places too. And you mentioned, you know, what can we do about it? And I know you do the Nibby walks, the water walks. And you just mentioned, you know, how you are on a farm and like notice what's happening on the land. And so can you talk a little bit about how we can be even more aware of what's going on with, you know, changes and what's going on with the land wherever we might be?
Yeah, I think just, you know, like if you step outside a little bit more often, then if you just stay in an office building all day and, you know, you have air conditioning on, you know, you only have to deal with that little bit of, you know, the air quality between your footsteps from your office door to your front door. Mm-hmm. But if you're working out in the field and you're breathing in that smoke, you know, like it really affects people. I have asthma. And so Saturday I went down to Prairie Island Powwow and had to wear a mask while I was outside. I mean, I didn't want it to stop me, but I did take the precaution of wearing a mask, and I didn't stay that long. But it was so beautiful to see all the dancers and all, you know, the relatives, and got to sit with Midnight Express for a little while. And then I popped over to Under the Pines when my grandnephew sings at that drum. And, you know, and it was just so nice to see everybody. You know, to experience what's happening, we really have to be outdoors. And I think that's one of the things that happens on the Nipi walks is people are outside all day. And when they're walking, they're quiet. You know, no earbuds, no, just silence while they walk and carry the water. And you can hear the water in the pail. And you can hear the wind in the trees or the lack of it. And you can hear the birds, and, you know, the horses always come running to greet us. And you know, you can hear them call to you. And, you know, I remember walking through Missouri once, and all of a sudden I came upon probably about 30 feet on the road where there was just dead bees dead on the road. I'm like, what caused that? You know, so when you're outside, you see these things and you can pay attention to them. So that's what we try to do on the water walks, is really connect people with the water. You know, it's not just something that you turn your tap on and you have it. And out here on the farm too, you know, like I have a well. So it's not like in the city where you have this unlimited amount of water flowing from your faucet. And so in the last couple of years, we've had to take water tanks over to, you know, the little fire and department down the road and buy water for the fields. So, you know, the more one can be outside. I wanted to say too that on the water walks, when we ask people to walk in silence, you know, your sensory perceptions are different, right? Because you're walking in silence and you can feel the wind blowing, you can hear everything, and you can also taste things in the air, right? So all your senses are sort of opened up to what's happening in the world. This spring, I've led like a few like small walks already, short walks, couple walks around Como, Little Como Lake in St. Paul, Battle Creek. I have another one around Como. And then August 1st, we're going to walk the Rum River from Lake Mille Lacs to Anoka, to the confluence with the Mississippi, and really looking forward to that.
You're listening to Native Lights, Where Indigenous Voices Shine. Native Lights is produced by Minnesota Native News and AMPRS with support from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Today we're speaking with Sharon Day. Sharon Day is enrolled with the Boys Fort Band of Ojibwe, and she serves as the executive director of the Indigenous Peoples Task Force. She's also a grandmother, an artist, a musician, and writer, and she leads water walks, or Nibby walks. For those who don't know, do you mind giving just a brief summary of a Nibby walk?
So a Nibby walk, we gather the water at the source, the headwaters. We begin with ceremony. We use sage to cleanse ourselves. We sort of get ourselves in a circle in the order that we're going to walk that day. We offer everybody a sema. People speak for their sema. We talk about the, you know, the protocols. And then after everyone has spoken for their sema, then we begin. You know, one woman will carry the water and a man will carry the staff. Or if there aren't any men there, then women can carry the staff as well. And they begin. And when they begin that first walk in the morning, you know, we sing the Nibby song. You know, that song says, water, we love you, we thank you, we respect you. And as we sing that song, I tell everybody before we start that, you know, we're carrying the water, but we are the water. You know, every single one of us is composed of, the majority of our bodies is water. And when we lose, like when we've lost over 50% of our body's water, you know, that's when we begin to make that journey to walk on. But while we're here, we are the water. We are water. And so as we're singing to that water that they're carrying, we love you, we thank you, we respect you. We're also sending all of our love with those two people that are walking. And our teachings as Ojibwe people, and I believe all and Indigenous people have similar values. If we really practice those seven grandmother, grandfather teachings of being loving, being kind, being generous, you know, being courageous and you know, always being honest and seeking wisdom, we would all always love each other. We wouldn't have to be reminded of that if we actually lived those teachings. And when we say, you know, you know, not just talking about the humans in that circle, but we're talking about, you know, the water, the air we breathe, the trees that create the air, the grass, the birds, everything. That's all our relations. And that's who we're greeting, is everything in creation. The seven grandmother grandfather teachings, they have to be more than placards on a wall. You know, they actually have to be something that we begin to live. You know, me myself, just about every morning I get up and I give some gratitude for, you know, this beautiful land that I take care of, and, you know, for my four-leggeds and the two-leggeds and the, you know, the chickens and the goats and the dogs. And the longer we're here, the more animals we see. So this year we saw an otter, wabashishi, a makwa. I mean, we see more and more all these animals. And of course we have wawashkeshi that walk through the land just about every evening. And a lot of people ask me, can I come hunt on your land? And I always tell them, I'm sorry, I love venison as much as anybody, but, you know, this is kind of a sanctuary for them. And because, you know, they're safe here, it wouldn't be fair all of a sudden in November to allow somebody to come and shoot them. That's just not fair. So I'm sorry, no. And, they, and some people say, well, I'll just use a bow. Well, no. You know, I'm grateful for this land. I'm grateful for the animals. But I also ask every day to be just a little kinder. If I could just be a little kinder, a little more gentle, that's what I ask for myself. Mm-hmm. Just like everybody else, you know, I'm driving to work and that person cuts in front of me and like, what is wrong with you? We all have to practice that, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I hear that. Yep, that's a good reminder, I think. Sharon, how did you find yourself doing Nibi walks? Was this something that you practiced with another person, or how did this come about?
Well, in 1998, I was initiated into the Madewan Lodge, and the Grand Chief said to all of us, you know, all you Madewans down the cities, go help those Dakota people. They're trying to save the spring. And so I went, and that was about 2.5 years then that I worked with trying to save Camp Coldwater. And what he said to us was, you know, when you're initiate, everything is like hyper, right? You're hyper sensitive to everything. And he said, you know, what would happen if all of the women in the world stood up and said no more? Because women are the life givers, and water is the life giver. In our Ojibwe ways, women are responsible for the water. So I thought to myself, you know, whenever you see pictures around the world of people carrying water, it's always the women. It's always women. And that just stuck with me, that, you know, what would happen if all the women of the world said no more? Josephine Mandamaniban, you know, another woman in the lodge, just a little bit older than me, she heard him say that too. She came to the lodge 2003 and said, I want to walk around Lake Superior, carry the water, because water has to move to be healthy. And so I want to do that. And so we all agreed with her, and I was fortunate to be able to walk with her then, and then not again until 2011. But in 2011, there was a Four Directions water walk where we brought the water from the four oceans to Lake Superior. And nobody wanted the south from Gulfport, you know, straight up, because, you know, there's no tribes down there. You know, they're all been removed, except for the Mississippi Choctaw. Anyhow, I said I would do that. And I did. And, you know, I'm the executive director of the Indigenous Peoples Task Force, and so much of my time is spent dealing with federal and state bureaucracies and foundations and so on and so forth. And to have 43 days, I think that walk took was 43 days, to be outside, not chained to a desk, not flying across the country to some meeting or conference, but just to walk and carry the water every day. You know, that was so incredible. And when we finished that walk, I told Josephine, Ron, I want us to walk the Mississippi River. And she said, I know that, Sharon. And I said, how did you know that? I just figured it out myself. She said, look at your staff. You carved the Mississippi River on your staff. And indeed I had. So that's how it began. And, you know, sometimes people think that, you know, if somebody does something, you know, that we consider to be extraordinary, we think they had some epiphany or some spiritual something, you know. And for me, it was, I wanted to walk the Mississippi River because it's a river I love. You know, it's the main artery on Nemama Key, and I crisscrossed it every day for 40 years. And in St. Paul, I owned a house in Highland Park, you know, just above the river. And I spent so much time by it. Anyhow, I wanted to do that, so I did it. And then when we finished that, Barb Baker LaRoche from LCO said, I think we should walk the Ohio River. And I said, no, let somebody else walk that. She said, it's the biggest polluter of the Mississippi. And I said, yeah, I know that. But, you know, somebody else can do that work. And then we were at a meeting about a month later, and she showed up at that meeting, and she handed me a box. And I opened up the box, and there was an eagle head inside. She said, this is for the staff. You know, I swore at her, and then I cried. And I said, okay, Ohio River, here we come. And after that, you know, then it was one other, St. Louis River, I think, in Minnesota, because of the mining issue, and then another river. And then it was finally, okay, this is what I'm going to do until I can't walk anymore. In Josephine, you know, those first walks, I mean, for the first 10 years, you know, she was always available to me by phone, or she would show up, walk in the Missouri River in 2017, and we were in eastern Montana, and then seeing this little black car pull up. She had just retraced a migration, right? Started in Duluth and walked all the way to St. Lawrence Seaway. So anyhow, so I'd been walking, it was just probably like the 6th or 7th of August, and we've been walking about a week or so. And a little black car pulled up, and I got out to see. We didn't expect anybody to be joining us, but I got out to see who it was, and it was Josephine. I said to her, what are you doing here? And she said, I came to support you, Sharon. And that is love. You know, when somebody's just walked 1,000 miles over 2 or 3 months, and then they drive clear across country to be with you, to support you, that is love. And that's how I felt about her too. I could call her. I remember calling her, and it was in Grand Rapids and Minnesota, and blizzards, snow coming directly into our face. And I called her that night, and I said, could you petition Kiwaden, the north wind? Could you tell the wind to be a little bit more gentle on us? She said, I'll do that right now. In the morning, we woke up, and we headed out, and it was still a blizzard, but the wind was at our back, and there were no cars on the road. It was like the most beautiful day because we didn't have to dodge traffic. Just one other thing about the water, too. When you're carrying the water, I've been walking around this twice now, around this little lake in St. Paul, and I notice each time that the water moved in a different way. You know, when we started the Mississippi walk up by Lake Itasca, it was 7 degrees, and the water froze in the pail that day, but it froze in a circular pattern. You know, the water was moved like that. But on this little lake in St. Paul, both times I've walked it, the water's like moving. Mm. You know, you can almost hear it like glug, glug. I've never heard water and, you know, just sound like that.
You're listening to Native Lights, Where Indigenous Voices Shine. Native Lights is produced by Minnesota Native News and Ampers with support from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Today we're speaking with Sharon Day. Sharon Day is enrolled with the Boys Fort Band of Ojibwe, and she serves as the executive director of the Indigenous Peoples Task Force. She's also a grandmother, an artist, a musician, and writer, and she leads water walks or nippy walks. Have you been witness then to transformation, whether, you know, little or big, or with yourself or others, as you've done these nippy walks for the couple decades?
I saw a young woman walk with me for 10 days, and she had been in treatment. And she got out and drank that night, and then the next day her mother said, "You're going to go walk on this water walk in the center." So she was with me for 10 days. It was kind of a struggle those first couple of days. And at one point, that first night, she told me, she said, "I really want a drink. And I have $20 in my pocket, and I could go drinking." And I said, "Yes, you could. But let me tell you a story and sing you a song." So I did. Told her the whole story, sang the song, and she said, "Okay, I'm going to go to bed. But tomorrow I might drink." And I'm like, "Okay, fine." Well, she stayed with me for 10 days. And on the 10th day, she ran up ahead of us. We crossed the Mississippi River into Wisconsin, and there was a wayside rest up there. And she ran up ahead of us, and she came running back, and she had this eagle feather in her hand. And she said, "Look what I found." And I said, "Look what found you." And she said, "It's kind of like me. It's a little battered." And I said, "But it's still beautiful." And she said, "Yes." Anyhow, that was a transformation. And to see her, you know, be this sort of like chip on her shoulder, tough little girl, to be this, it just the tears streaming down her face, you know, "Look what I found." You know, and there have been other things like that. You know, I've seen people walk with me that, gosh, I was afraid they were going to have a heart attack. And, you know, canes, heavy. And then, you know, see them a couple of years later and they're walking without a cane. And I was in South Dakota, and this car pulled up ahead of me, kind of a like souped up little, I think it was a Mustang. And the guy motioned for me to come up. So I went up to greet him, and he opened his door. And when he opened his door, it was an Indian guy, a vet, put his leg out the door, and it was a steel prosthesis. And he said, I passed you yesterday, and I didn't have time to come find you, but I had time today to find you." And he said, "I want to thank you for what you're doing." And he reached out his hand and shook my hand. I shook hands with him, and you know, I took my hand away, you know, there was a folded up bill in it. And so he said, "My prayers will be with you." And he left. And I looked at it, and it was a $100 bill that he had gifted me. And I knew if that man could be walking, he would be walking with us. So we walk for all the people who cannot walk.
Miigwech, Sharon Day, what a wonderful person to talk to. Sharon really reminds me about connection. These nippy walks, the water walks, really help to connect people with water and to pay attention to it, and really, you know, a living entity to respect and to be thankful for. So, Miigwech, Sharon Day, really appreciate that conversation. So, Miigwech for joining us. I'm Leah Lem. Kikawabaman. You're listening to Native Lights, where Indigenous voices shine. Native Lights is produced by Minnesota Native News and Ampers with support from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.
Good boy.
So you got a new wind chime at home?
We got so many new wind chimes at home.
This weekend, we had a bunch of freezing rain that just stuck to everything, including all the trees. So that was the sound of this little leatherwood shrub that visually just looked like it was like shrink-wrapped in ice. And then when you shook it, you know, the ice would break a little because it's rigid, even though the leatherwood is flexible. And so that was the sound of this poor ice-covered bush being shaken around a little bit.
Wow. And your dog. Yeah. Call it, your dog was and out there with you.
And my dog being a good boy.
Yeah. What's your dog's name?
His name is Drogo. He's a big, beefy sweetheart.
Drogo. Yeah. That's Charlie Mitchell. I'm Heidi Holton, and this is the Season Watch podcast, our first of 2026. And it's a place for the curious, filled with the delights of nature. And we're here to prove that even in ice storms and snow and blizzards, there are still things to be seeing out there.
Absolutely. I will say that everything being frozen in like a layer of ice does not look pleasant for the plants, and I'd rather not be out living in it, but it did make everything so beautiful.
I know. We had some issues with our tower for KEXE and yeah. KPXE with freezing stuff, so that was not fun for our engineer, Steve Noy. So, yeah, it is. It's a beautiful thing. Did you address how you were walking? Do you wear the yak tracks? Did you do any falls on the ice?
I've done some slips. I haven't done any falls. I should probably be wearing my yak tracks. Actually, in one of the last hurrahs of my career in outdoor retail, I went to a Salomon like training thing, and they gave us one free pair of shoes.
Oh.
Any of their shoes. And so the shoes that I chose were these like trail running shoes. I don't run on trails, but they're waterproof. They zip up the side, and then on the bottom, they have spikes on them.
Ooh.
And that's my go-to, it's slippery out.
Sure.
Pair of shoes.
The problem with that, like if you walked into KEXE wearing those shoes, we got wood floors, we got some...
You'd scratch them all up.
Yep. Yeah. So, but... all good ideas, and I think really a good reminder, at the very least, shuffle anywhere you're going. And I never stop talking about, like, there was like once or twice I've done it where I'm getting to KEXE really early in the morning, and I put that leg out the door when I pull up into the parking lot and don't realize how slippery what I'm stepping into is. And it's like, thank God I'm holding the door, but I'm, you know, a little too old to be doing the splits is what I'm saying. And it can pull something, you know? So it's just always paying attention to that. That's not, I guess it's nature, right? I didn't need to go into that. But I don't want people to have falls and have it affect them.
So. No. Yeah. And like putting out some sand or some gravel can also be, you know, nature's yak tracks. So you could put it on the ground instead of on your foot.
Right. And limit your use of salt, right? Because that may have some effects. But you know, this is sort of interesting because, you know, we're in a new year here, and that means our students have been off, like we have been off on holiday. And so we had to kind of figure out what are we going to do this week because we didn't have any student reports. We had a great idea, didn't we?
We sure did. And that great idea was to talk to one of our partnering phonology teachers, Chad Kaditz. He's from Little Falls. He's a middle school science teacher. I think we emailed him the day before. Yeah. And sure enough, there he was. So thank you, Chad. Short notice, but a great result.
It led us to some thinking of like how fun it would be to talk to other teachers in the year to come about what they're seeing in their students, because I think, you know, John talks about this a lot, and you and I do as well, of, yes, this is about learning about science and nature, but it's bigger.
Yep. Yeah. And I think especially, you know, with all of these students we get to hear from that are watching the change in seasons, I also love hearing about the change in them and the change in all of us that are learning from them.
Yeah, let's listen to a little bit of how Chad approaches talking to kids about this or getting the ball rolling.
And there's just a special feeling you get when you recognize something.
Yes.
Which is why I always start, our first topic every year I've been doing this is always butter and eggs.
Yeah.
It's everywhere and it's such an easy plant to identify. So I want the kids to get out on that first day and actually spot something on their own. And it's fun that, you know, they'll come back the next day all excited. But I've done all kinds of different. We used to just do the talks to start class. And for a couple of years, I tried doing journals, you know, where kids would draw pictures. Or my biggest thing is I didn't want it ever to become like work, like class work. It was just something we did for fun. You know, I think there's something to be said for seeing something and recognizing it, but there's also something to be said for kind of feeling like, yeah, whether it's just one topic or something, that you're maybe the smartest person in the room, or you're a little expert on something, and that definitely keeps them locked in.
I'm so happy, like, to hear how involved his students are. And butter and eggs, it is a very common one to find. Do you know, have you seen it?
Yes.
Is that one you know?
That is one of the few that I know as well. And I think he's exactly right. There's something about naming. You know, if you feel a little bit, I mean, it gets into funny territory too, because apparently none of us want to say that we're an expert. And that's the whole point of phonology, is that we're always learning. But you do feel some pride, even if I'm not right. If I can come up with a name for something to say, this might be this, it triggered something in you.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think for a long time, probably until I moved back to Minnesota around 2021, I was kind of resistant to learning the names of things. Mm. I felt like, I think there was just so much ego in the people that I was working
sure.
with.
It's like that you didn't want to succumb to the man.
Yeah.
The man getting you down.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's like, why do I need to like go through a bunch of flashcards to enjoy and engage in nature? Like, y'all are gatekeeping.
Yes.
But then I started learning the names of a few things, and it does change your relationship.
Mm-hmm.
To recognize something and know its name. It's such a human, we love a label.
Yeah.
We love knowing the name of something. It makes it real in a way.
Right.
And like, it makes it an individual. I'm reluctantly a huge fan of learning the names of things.
Yes. Yeah. No, I think you said something interesting there about it's a relationship then. That's, again, getting to the bigger picture of things of in these times, having a relationship with nature is super helpful.
It really is.
So
in these times.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't want to get into it too much, because I think everybody gets a little tired of hearing like, what's your New Year resolution and all of that kind of stuff. But I've tried to, just for myself, think about it more as set some goals maybe, or that kind of thing. And I was thinking about it in terms of nature and season watch, that this might be an interesting time for us to do that, or ask people if they're doing that, that you want to know two more plants this year, or you know of this trail that you've never gone to and you mean to go to it or something, that maybe we have some goals ahead.
Yeah, I like that. I think this is just me, but I find that like when I set goals in the new year, it has historically been a way of me telling myself that I'm not enough as I am.
Mm.
And that this year I'm going to be better, because I'm going to be stronger and more productive and more the way the man wants me to be. And so I've kind of moved away from like the goal setting part of New Year's, but I do always look at the year ahead and still hope that things are different.
Yeah.
And one of the ways that I'm hoping this year will be different is that every spring and beginning of summer, I am out in the canoe like as much as I can. And then July and August, all of a sudden, you know, going down there, having to walk up the big hill back to the it's so hot outside, there are bugs, and I kind of lose the spark. And this year, I really don't want to do that. And I know what will help is if I set plans with other people to go canoeing. That's one of my wishes.
Really good point on how you balance that, how any of us balance that, of not thinking of things as like a before and after picture, you know, that you're better, but that you want to add a few things to your life. But it's hard to get your brain around that kind of thing. I do want to say to you, those months that you haven't been as much in the canoe, remember the last few years, there's been a lot of smoke and different things going on in those months. So that may, you know, Canada fires coming through and stuff. And so sometimes there's some things, because I looked back on the summer and I thought, wow, I didn't get out. I like to have frequent pontoon rides with my friends, and we get out and swim and do this cool stuff. And I'm like, oh, we didn't do it very much. And I started to like tell myself, like, why didn't I do this? And I was like, oh, wait, we had a lot of extended smoke issues going on. So
that's a really good point.
See?
Also,
let yourself
off. You're such a compassionate human, and I love you so much. Thank you.
Well, we want to hear a little bit more of this conversation we had, right, with Chad Caddis from Little Falls Middle School. If you haven't yet done it and you're on Instagram, you're missing an opportunity to see cool stuff by checking out the Little Falls Phenology Instagram page. You should do that. And then let's take a listen to part of our conversation from this week.
I had an experience with one student who was notoriously bad as a student. But when we started talking phenology, he and his grandfather started keeping a journal of the birds that they were seeing. And suddenly this kid was, you know, he was top student in terms of identifying birds and just bird habitat, birds in general. He had that niche that was his, and it really made a difference in his life.
It's kind of funny. I had a student this year, a sixth grader, but I had her father however many years ago in class. And I remember he was just a kid that would always be able to answer questions about phenology. And we had made a joke in class, and I can still remember this, and it wasn't that big of a deal, but he was, you know, the king of phenology for the class. And she brought that up. I mean, that's been 20 years ago, and she brought it up in class. But my dad said that he was the phenology king. And I'm like, oh, crazy. That stuff sticks.
Yeah, that is amazing. I talk to a lot of teachers, and they tell me the same thing. When the kids come back and they run into them, and they're seniors in high school or they're out of school, and when they talk to them, they say, what do you remember? And they say, phenology.
Yeah.
It really makes a difference in a lot of their lives, which is very cool.
Well, no, too, this is exciting because that was something, you know, I've been doing it for 30 years, and I kind of felt like phenology was a word that no one outside of our classroom really knew. And it's been exciting listening to, obviously, you know, the radio show and your reports in the morning, and then now the Season Watch podcast. And it's like there's a whole world of people out there that know about this. It's kind of like a secret club that all of a sudden you're, it's like when you go to college and realize that there's other people like you out there.
Yeah, very cool. You said you're going to be talking to them today about Cecropia moths, which is an interesting subject. What else do you have them sort of keyed up for January? So I'm going to be on the Phenology show this morning. I'll be reviewing some of the events that I look for in January, some of the things that typically happen in January. What are some things that you will have the kids looking for this month?
I mean, birds are always a big topic. It's kind of an easy thing. One of the things I usually, this time of year too, try to get them paying more attention to our lichen, just because there's so many different, I think lichen are fascinating, but there's so many different types of lichen out there. And it's something that, you know, 99% of the population would walk past without even looking at or paying attention to. So little things like that, you know, it's obviously this time of year, things slow down quite a bit. So, you know, all the different types of bracket fungi, which are something you can find in January and February. And it's always the leading up into the, you know, the spring when everything gets really exciting with the birds returning and the plant growth. So you have to kind of bide your time in January and February, but there's so many little things. So it's a lot of topics, things that aren't going to jump out at you, but there's so much you can still go out and discover this time of year.
This is when the king of phenology would come in and say, I saw. You'd be like, yeah, good. Nobody else has seen that, but that doesn't mean it's not happening. It just means that you're more observant, that you're paying more attention. Yeah.
We're talking with Chad Kaditz this morning. He teaches phenology in Little Falls, and they've got a great Instagram page. You're going to want to follow Little Falls Phenology. Chad, I'm looking at how Jocelyn started off her Christmas morning. Tell us about this one. This is on your Instagram feed.
Yeah, and she's a kid that she was a student last year, so she's at the high school this year. And last year she's just one of those great, any science teacher would just love to have a Jocelyn in their lives, because she's so inquisitive. And she's a kid that would, you know, I remember as a seventh grader is when she had found a bird that hit their window, and she dissected it, and just one of those unique kids. And but she stopped in the last day of school before we left for Christmas break, stopped by to visit. And then the next morning, or whenever it was, Christmas morning, I guess, sent some videos. So she had gone out. I mean, I always make a big deal of it. I always try to feed birds, hand feed birds. I think it's kind of cool, and it's a little nerdy and dorky, and the kids laugh at it, but I always show them videos when I do it. And then she had gone out Christmas morning and got a little chickadee to land on her hand. So sent me the video. I love sharing things like that. And it's cool to see, you know, kids that are no longer in your class are still connected to it.
It makes me so happy.
You know, this was from Tuesday morning this week, and I got to see two grown men cry because they feel so strongly about this, you know?
Yep. I was wondering whether that was John choking up a bit.
Mm-hmm. And Chad, mm-hmm. too, when he talked about the student. Yeah. I think it's such a great thing. I don't know if I ever look at lichen. He talked about that. That's a good thing this time of year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is it hard to see with the snow?
Well, they're up on trees.
Okay.
They're on. Okay. Lichens are one of those things where once you start seeing them, you mm-hmm. see them everywhere, okay. particularly in northern Minnesota, because your air quality is so good. Lichens are profuse up there, and the number of species is incredible. If you end up getting into lichens, there's a phenomenal field guide written by Joe Wileski. He's one of the naturalists at Wolf Ridge, and it's a really wonderful guide to some of the more common lichens, especially in the North Woods. But they're so colorful. Especially if you are able to like bring along like a little jeweler's loop or hand lens, or even if you have like one of the newer iPhones, it has a really good macro lens.
Okay.
They're so intricate and fascinating. You know, they're the big green ones that we often see on the side of trees. They're called like a green shield lichen. Then there are like brown shield lichens. My favorite ones are these ones that are, they look very nondescript, like a drab gray color. In daylight, if you go out at night with a UV light, they glow just this super intense gold.
Wow. Well, you've inspired me, and of course Chad Kaditz there, but I'm going to be heading out into the woods on our trails to ski, I think, later today. I'm going to look. I'm going to see what I see.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Instead of worrying, I mean, the trail is a little icy, so even though we have barely any incline, mm-hmm. I'm definitely being a little more careful going down the small little hills and stuff like that. But it's the nice thing of when we do get the ice with trails, like how it's fun. It's very fun when they kind of get iced over, you know? But scary. That's why I don't generally go.
I mean, that's the adrenaline rush, right?
I know. Yeah, and that might be a good... I generally just go on, there's just always things to see because we don't have as much light this time of year. I don't always have time to like go find a trail or that kind of thing. And I'm a little, mm-hmm. I've only retaken up cross country skiing in the last 3 years or so. So I'm a little less confident on going to like some big hills. There's the Legion Trails here in Grand Rapids. It's right behind the high school. It's a big hills and they're lit up all night and they're very cool, but I've walked them in the off season and they're great, but I think that's all I can handle for the moment.
I've been a little shy on the skiing. The last time I went with my wife, Haley, and she's a great snowboarder, but relatively new to cross-country skiing. And she fell, and the way that she fell was her ski was like upturned on its side, and she fell directly with her tailbone onto the ski in this pretty hard-packed snow, broke her tailbone. And that took months to heal.
Wait a minute.
And
we're supposed
now
to.
Now I'm always like a little nervous about.
We're supposed to inspire people to get outside. Here I was talking about shuffling
and
ice.
Telling terror stories.
I know. But you just got to be, that's part of it. You just got to be a little bit watchful and know where you're going. John Latimer this week on his phenology report also gave us some ideas about this time of year and what to be looking for.
Just a couple of notes about chickadees because they kind of interest me. And this time of year, they're going to be starting to sing. They have done recent research on the songs of the chickadees. They found out that both male and female chickadees sing the Phoebe song and that the chickadees can recognize the sex of the bird singing by the type of song that they sing. For me, not so much, but for the chickadees, yes, they can. Chickadees are really interesting little birds. You wonder how they can get through the winter. They cache seeds. They can remember their caches up to 28 days. The part of the brain that is spatial and focuses on memory is the hippocampus, and it is at its largest size in October, and by February, as it begins to exhaust its caches, the hippocampus starts to shrink. And come February, it is pretty small. So even though they are developing this ability to remember where they've hidden things, towards February, it gets a little bit less and less. And probably it's because they've exhausted most of their hiding places. Having feeders doubles the chance of a chickadee's survival. Just having that regular source of food for them can keep a lot of chickadees alive that would otherwise die. Chickadees are hierarchical. That means that there is a top dog in the flock, and that top dog is going to appropriate all of the food that it wants and needs before it's going to allow any of its subservient flock members to eat. So feeding at a bird feeder sort of eliminates that threat to the lesser birds, those of lesser significance in the flock. So they are right now probably just beginning to wake up. They roost usually singly, which is kind of hard to believe because they're so tiny, and yet usually in some thick brush or maybe in a cavity, but sometimes they'll roost in groups, but mostly they roost singly. They can go into torpor. They can lower their body temperature up to 12 degrees centigrade, which is that's like 20 degrees Fahrenheit. So they can drop their body temperature down. It will keep them alive in very cold temperatures by just kind of going into this torpor and waking up from it to survive in the mornings.
Torpor.
Torpor. That's one of our words, right?
Yes, yeah.
Man, they're great facts about chickadees there.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I immediately got very curious, and you might have heard me, like, trying to click very quietly.
Yeah, what did it make you think about or want to know more about?
Well, what I was thinking about is in terms of, you know, how we've been talking about winter is like power saving mode time, mm-hmm. or like a battery saver or whatever. The brain is a very energy hungry organ. And so, for instance, shrews shrink their brains like by, I think, a third, it might be two thirds over the winter, just because they don't want to have to feed all that energy into their brain. And for chickadees, it's the opposite, where because their brain is so important to finding the energy that they need, it's actually larger in the winter. So I just thought that was really interesting. I was also struck by their memory is just incredible, that they can stash so many seeds and find them a month later or even longer. And so I went onto birdsoftheworld.org. It's run through the Cornell Lab of Ornithology. Really amazing compendiums for each species of like all of the science kind of behind them. And chickadees that are further north have larger hippocampi compared to chickadees in southern latitudes. So even though it's more energy expensive, it clearly is an adaptive like benefit for them to have that bigger brain all winter.
Wow.
Be able to find all that food.
I was trying to extrapolate that to myself, you know, get a little selfish here, but I'm like, okay, so I'm still in torpor, right? It's winter. I can still you know, in the pajama pants the minute you get home, and relaxation, quieter mode of winter time in Minnesota.
Absolutely. And like even chickadees have to enter torpor.
Yeah.
Definitely balancing that high brain with a lot of sleepy time.
If you are like Charlie and some of what you heard today made you curious or you want to add to this conversation, you are always invited to do so. We hear from lots of people and we have a method of doing that through SpeakPipe where you can leave us a voice memo. You'll find that on our page at kexe.org. Look for Season Watch and then you can also see it in the show notes of the podcast. So next week, back to students, no doubt, don't you think?
Back to students. I believe we'll be hearing from Pam Perry.
Oh,
I wonder
right.
if Pam will be able to tell us her qualifications for who's a birder. So I'm still thinking about
it. Yeah, she seems like, I think everybody's a little in awe of Pam. And so I think you might think that she's got some real qualifications, but I bet she's a little more open than I would assume. But we shall see. That's Charlie Mitchell. I'm Heidi Holton. Thanks for tuning in to another edition of the Season Watch podcast from KAXE.
And to bring us out today, we have the Chickadees Spring Song, sometimes known as the Phoebe call or the cheeseburger call. And this is a recording that I got from Zeno Canto by Jonathan Jongsma.
Did I hear a little woodpecker in there too? Sure sounded like it.
Sure did. Good ear.
All right. That's the chickadee. Thanks, Charlie. We'll check in next week.
Great. Thank you, Heidi.
If that's what it takes to be free, I don't mind. Still moving me. Still moving me. It's hard to explain how I feel. It won't go in words, but I know that it's real. I can be moving or I can be still. But still moving me. Still moving me.
Thank you for